Welcome to this episode of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. Tonight, my guest is a section coordinator out of Louisiana. A little bit on the hot seat. Apparently, his area director doesn't like the fact that he's not holding clubs accountable for not running USPSA matches. But we'll get there in the end. Right now, if you would, join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Corey Yates.
Hello, hello, hello.
Howdy. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine on this Monday, the apocalypse day.
Yeah.
The eclipse people.
We should all be dead. And there should be a whole new sea in the middle of North America like there was 6 million years ago.
Yep. CERN's opening a portal and all that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. First off, I need to comment on your background. I like all the targets on the walls.
Yeah. This is my little man cave here.
I like it. Were you born with that voice, or are you just playing it up for the podcast?
Born with it, I suppose. I'm not putting anything on.
All right. Well, damn it. You're making me sound bad. Okay. All right. So, Corey, if you would, take a moment and introduce yourself.
Yeah. So, I'm Corey Yates. I'm the Louisiana section coordinator, like you said. 35 years old, married with one kid. I live right outside of New Orleans, Louisiana. So, if you're familiar with that area. And, yeah, I've been shooting for about 8 years now in USPSA. And, yeah, the whole thing with the protests, I'm sure we'll get into, but a lot of people down here in Louisiana and really just in the Southeast, it seems, outside of Area 3 are not too happy with what's going on. And, yeah, I've just been trying to do right by the shooters in my section. I feel like that's probably my biggest responsibility.
Okay. So, Corey, what I like to do is hit you right up front with all the hard questions and make you sweat a little bit, and then the rest of the conversation's easy.
Roger that.
Okay. Question number one. Favorite movie?
So I did watch a few of these, and I think the last guy that is on your YouTube channel right now actually stole mine.
That son of a gun.
So, yeah, I actually prefer the newer Top Gun, the Top Gun Maverick. I think most of the movies that have come out in probably the last 8 years are pretty trash, but that one I was looking forward to for a long time, and it lived up to expectations, I think.
Okay, so now you've got to tell me, why do you think Maverick was better than the original?
I mean, I like both, and just like the last guy, I watched it probably a million times, but looking back at it now, it's a little bit cringy. You know, some of the stuff was a little cringe. I feel like Tom has come a long way as an actor, and he just crushed it in Maverick. Like, there was times where I almost choked up a little bit with the callbacks to Goose and stuff like that. I just think it was a spectacular movie. That's probably the best sequel that I've seen out there.
Okay. It definitely lived up to the billing, and now they're talking about another.
Oh, that would be awesome.
It would be. I'd be okay with that. I would have to go. Did you see it in the theater?
We did, in IMAX, I believe.
Okay.
So I spent my money. I supported them.
Well, the reason I ask is I think there are certain movies that need to be seen in a theater the first time.
Right.
Yeah, that is one of them.
When it was first coming out, they postponed it, I think, from the COVID stuff. So I was kind of bummed. But I'd marked my calendars. I was ready to go see it. We definitely ran out there and saw it. I've probably seen it 20 times since. It's one of my favorites. It's an easy one to put on when you need something to watch.
Now, do you like his Mission Impossible series?
Yeah. That's one of the ones where I think the first couple were better than the most recent. I think just like most things, they kind of go overboard as the sequels progress. Kind of like Fast and the Furious, the first couple were really good. And then now they're like super spy agents and stuff instead of car racers. So they kind of lost the plot, in my opinion.
Okay, fair enough. All right. I've learned that most people don't read anymore. Yep. If you have read books, what is your favorite?
Yeah, so I'm definitely in that camp. I grew up right when internet was starting to be a thing. And I could probably count on one hand the amount of books I've read in my life, and I think all of them were mandatory readings in high school, so I don't really have a favorite book.
Okay, fair enough. And it's funny, I've been telling my wife, I'm like, anybody 35 and under has lived on the internet their entire life. So yep,
that's pretty true.
Yeah, so I totally get it. Okay, I don't know if you're into superheroes or not. If you are, who's your favorite superhero? If not, then who's your favorite historical figure?
Yeah, so this was a tough one. I'm big into the Marvel thing. I enjoy those that whole universe. And so I had to think about this one for a little while, but I think if I had to put it down to one guy, it'd be Thor.
Okay, why Thor?
Just kind of the badass, I guess you could say. He's doesn't really care what people think, kind of is the good guy despite that, and gets stuff done his way, you know. If I forget, now that I'm on the spot, I can't think of exactly the time where he kind of showed that, but basically, if somebody wrongs him, he goes out and fixes it. Doesn't matter what anybody thinks. Doesn't matter what the plan was. It's business time for that guy. And he has the ability to get it done.
All right. Definitely carries a big hammer.
Yeah, big hammer. And then now he's carrying a big axe.
Yeah. I mean, it brings a whole new level of meaning to drop the hammer.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a solid guy.
Yeah. Okay. Favorite gun, favorite caliber. They don't have to be married together.
Right. So favorite gun, I know it's probably cheesy a little bit, but just the AR-15. I mean, just the modularity of an AR-15, to being able to purpose build the same platform to many different disciplines. So you could build it into a DMR, a CQB weapon. I just think that AR-15s are the coolest thing ever. And I spent my entire childhood wanting one, but never getting one. And so when I became an adult, that was probably the first gun I went out and bought. And I've been building them ever since. I really enjoy that platform.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, even the wide range of calibers that you can throw in there.
That's true, too. I mean, it is it's the Lego of the gun world, I feel like. You can build it into whatever.
Yeah, you really can. So what about caliber, then?
So caliber... 9mm is what I carry. 9mm is what I shoot in competition. You can shoot 9mm out of PCCs now, which is really cool. I think 9mm is the go-to round for me. It's the most plentiful. You can buy it anywhere. I'm not into the specialty calibers or anything like that. I don't do any long-range shooting. I think 9mm is definitely it's the only thing I've ever competed with. I enjoy that.
Okay. You said you live right outside of New Orleans. Have you been there a bunch?
Oh, yeah. I work there every single day.
Okay. What's your favorite New Orleans memory?
I would have to say when the Saints won the Super Bowl. So I was at a friend of mine's house watching the Super Bowl, like a watch party. And that's uptown. We were in uptown New Orleans. And as soon as the Saints won the Super Bowl, we ran downtown. And it was dead stop traffic. I think almost nobody was in their cars. Everybody was out in the streets running, high-fiving each other and stuff like that. It was, the entire city was a huge block party, basically.
And, so it was like Mardi Gras part two.
Mardi Gras times 10. I mean, everybody was out of control that night. The Saints went, 40-something years, I think, without even touching a Super Bowl. And then they go out there and crush the whole season and win it. And the city was on fire that night.
Literally
speaking.
Okay. What was your thought then at the halftime kickoff when they did the onside kick?
Oh, that was scary. I'll be honest.
But, was that not the ballsiest move you've ever seen?
It really was. And I mean, if you remember even the playoffs run that year, there was a bunch of stuff. Like, I think the interception with Meacham and then ran him down and stole the ball back. It was almost a pick six. And then Meacham got the ball back from him, the guy who intercepted the ball from him, and ran it back for a touchdown. I just remember there was a bunch of crazy plays that season that got us there, and it was needed. I think it was, 4 years after Katrina hit the city? So it was nice. I think they won 2009. Katrina was 2005. Yeah. So it was 4 years after the hurricane took out the city. The city needed some morale boost, and that was a big one.
Okay. All right, so getting into the meat of things. It sounds like you have lived your whole life in New Orleans. Or, I mean, I'm not New Orleans, but Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Did you grow up with guns?
Oh, yeah. We, you know, we hunted and stuff like that, but it was never the competition type of deal. And really, I don't think I even shot a pistol until I was like 17 years old. It was strictly just hunting shotguns and rifles. We deer hunted multiple times a year. We'd go squirrel hunting, dove hunting, stuff like that. And, you know, do the little competitions with your cousins and stuff like that at the hunting camp. But, yeah, I didn't get into the actual shooting part of things until well into adulthood. And that was by sheer happenstance anyways.
How many times have you almost been eaten by an alligator?
None, actually. They're actually pretty terrified of us, surprisingly enough.
Oh, okay.
You get anywhere near them things, they take off like a rocket ship.
Wow, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever messed with any alligator or snapping turtles?
Yeah, we have caught those. They got ditches all around there and there. You can catch them pretty easy.
Yeah, that's another one I wouldn't want to get my fingers near its mouth, though.
No. Being older now, I'm terrified of those things. But being a kid playing in ditches, he did some wild stuff.
You don't know any better then.
No,
you know what I mean?
No fear.
Right. Oh, we were so dumb back then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, goodness. It's a good thing we didn't know any better. Our childhood would be boring.
Right. Well, I still got all my fingers, so that's a good
thing. That's all that matters. That is all that matters. All right, so you hunted deer and stuff like that. So what happened at 17? That was it a friend? How did you get introduced to shooting a pistol?
My dad ended up getting one, and because he was just a hunter. I think, I don't remember what was going on at the time, but he actually started to keep one in the car, and then seeing him with it, we actually started shooting it at the hunting camp and stuff like that. But back then, I remember thinking, like, you know, movies didn't do shooting justice. Like, oh, I could shoot those guys and stuff like that. And I remember the first time shooting a couple mags out of a pistol, I realized, okay, yeah, no, it's a lot harder than you give it credit for. It's not like a long gun. Pistols actually take some skill.
Yeah, it does. Little bit of offset on those sights and you're way off.
Yeah, makes a difference with how far away them sights are.
Yeah, you would have to compare pistol shooting to long range shooting to get that same disparity.
And that was the first time experiencing that. And I realized, okay, I'm trash at pistols. I thought I was going to be a natural at it, and it does take some work.
So, at what point did you end up? So, if 17 was your first time ever firing a pistol, when was the first time you ever shot in competition? Anything could be a turkey shoot, anything.
Yeah. So, it's funny because it was after I ended up getting married. And we actually didn't start shooting pistol competition. We were out competing, I mean, not competing, shooting ARs at a local range. And they mentioned something about a PPC match on Sundays, which is like a precision pistol competition. And, you know, being the type that is super competitive, I've played sports my whole life and stuff like that. I was like, oh, I want to get into that. And so we ended up showing up out there. And it was a pistol or PCC thing. And we tried that out. It's more of a slow paced thing. There's six rounds in each mag. You have to reload between each six rounds and stuff like that. It's all points based. There's no time. It's just par times. And we got addicted to that. So we did that for like 6 months, I think. And then the USPSA guys had a match get canceled. So they showed up out there one morning and they had the race guns and they're reloading super fast. They got big magwells and stuff like that. Red dots on their guns instead of iron sights. I was like, what do those guys do, you know? And I ended up talking to them, and they told me about running around with a pistol and shooting. I was like, oh, now that's my jam. And I just knew when I went out there, I was going to beat everybody. And, of course, you got there and get humbled real quick when, you know, the old guys that could barely walk are smoking you, the little kids that could barely hold the guns are smoking you, and you're like, okay, okay. And the rest is history. That was 2015. We got into that, and I've been addicted ever since.
Okay, so let's back up for a second. You said you played a lot of sports. What did you play?
So baseball was my sport of choice. Played rec league all through, like, being a little kid, and then played for middle school, and then actually rode the bench all through high school. But, you know, that's a story for another time. But, yeah, baseball was my deal. That was my jam, pitching.
Okay. So who's your favorite Major League Baseball pitcher?
Oh, the Maddox, Greg Maddox for the Braves.
I got to go with Nolan Ryan. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's more of a mainstream, I guess. But
yeah,
Maddox was just a creative pitcher. He didn't have like the 95-mile-an-hour, 100-mile-an-hour fastball. He had to hit you with the dirty changeups and curveballs and stuff like that. He was a solid guy. The Braves were my favorite team growing up. So the Chipper Jones and stuff like that.
The 90s in their heyday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those dudes were bad.
Yep.
Yeah, Maddox was a great, great pitcher.
Yeah, he is.
So I guess he was more of an intellectual because Nolan Ryan just had pure heat. I mean, if he wanted to blow the by ball you weren't going to hit it. But yeah, Greg Maddox thought, and he had a lot of pitches in his repertoire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was more my style. I never did have the heat, but I had a mean curve, a changeup. You couldn't tell the difference between that and a two-seam, you know, as far as delivery. He was more my style, so I felt like he was going to be my idol, basically, going through sports at a young age.
Okay. All right, so 2015, so first you're shooting basically bullseye pistol,
mm-hmm.
and then dudes with spaceship guns told you about USPSA. You shoot one match there, and like everybody else, you get addicted.
Yep.
So your first USPSA match, what were you running?
Oh, you'll love this. So we were shooting a Glock 17. Me and my wife were sharing a Glock 17 at the PPC matches. And when I saw their race guns and stuff like that at the USPSA match, I immediately went home and bought everything you could buy to stick on a Glock to make it an open gun. And so I showed up with the slide racker on the back of the Glock with the frame mounted, like Carver custom slide ride Seymour with, I think it was like a Jaeger comp at the time. And it was, you probably could get about 3 or 4 consecutive shots off before it would jam. And so I spent the first couple months doing malfunction practice out there with an open Glock.
Oh, Lord. At what point did someone pull you aside and say, dude, what are you thinking?
Immediately. When I put the gun on at the safe table, they were like, brother, you've got probably as much money in that thing as a used open gun at the time, like an SDI Grandmaster or something. But here you are with this thing. And it, you know, oh, it was a learning experience.
So how long did you shoot the Glock?
I think probably 2 or 3 months. And actually, the guy that showed up to the PPC match with the race gun and stuff like that kind of took me under his wing and sold me one of his actual open guns, which I think at the time was a Freedom Gunworks. And then it was on after that. Once I had something that was reliable, it was on. But that's actually the gun that you see in that picture up there, is that Freedom Gunworks black and gold.
Okay. Gun. 38 super or 9 major?
9 major. I'm poverty open, you know.
Okay. So you go loud versus expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Those 9 major guns are loud.
Yep, yep. And you don't have to brass chicken though, so that's the big thing for me.
Right. Exactly. And I just learned that recently. I didn't even know that was a thing, but now I know that.
Oh, yeah.
So now I know what you're talking about. So what are you running on top of that thing as an optic?
So at the time, that was the Seymour slide ride or whatever it's called. That was like the go-to thing back then. And so now I'm shooting carry optics. I still rock a Seymour, but not that big honking thing.
So which Seymour are you running on your carry optics gun?
The RTS2.
Okay.
And they just came out with an RTS3, but I don't think for the money I'm going to spend on that for a marginally larger size window.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's going to hamper their sales a little bit.
Yeah, it's tough to spend $600-$700 on an optic that is going to be stuck to a slide.
Well, and especially now that, I mean, I'm not going to say the SRO is the gold standard, but the SRO is basically what everybody compares the optics to.
Right.
You know, like window size, because everybody knows what size it is. So if you're just marginally larger or the same size, and you're $100 or more above that, that's hard for people to swallow.
Oh, especially with a new dot that's unproven, you know.
Exactly.
It's a little tougher. The SRO is a known competitor.
Yeah, it's a known quantity, so absolutely. And now a lot of people are going to the 507 comp.
Yeah.
So
I actually ran that dot for a little while and then ended up selling it with a gun and sticking to the RTSD. It's just once you're used to something, I feel like the window size is cool and all, but we're having to relearn the index and stuff like that. It's once you're good with something, don't chase the hype train. Just, you know, get good at what you got. That's how I feel about it.
So what gun are you running now and what gun did you sell with the comp?
So
the 507 comp.
I'm running the Canic Rival right now.
Yes.
And, I think it's the greatest gun.
It is.
When the Rival S came out, I immediately got one. I had the hard chrome version, and I ran it for probably 7,000 rounds, and then started having some failure to extract problems. Sent it back to Canic. They said they shot 18 rounds out of it, and sent it back and said it functions fine. And so I went to the range, shot a mag out of it, had a failure to extract, and put it up for sale that night with the 507 comp on it. But I was running the polymer version first. Having gone from polymer version to steel version and then back to polymer version, I think I actually prefer the lighter weight gun. And I especially prefer the reliability increase. I don't know if your mileage has varied any from mine, but the S's don't seem to be the most reliable guns out there right now.
Well, I will say this. I have the black poly Rival, the dark side, and I have a chrome Rival S, and I can't get from day one, I cannot get a full magazine through my gun without a feeding issue or something.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I never had the mag over insertion issues that everybody seems to have. But eventually the spring wore out in the extractor. And I think still to this day, you can go on Canic's website and they don't offer the extractor spring for the S. You can still buy it for the original Rival, but not for the S. So a lot of people are going to the CZ75 extra power spring, and that seems to be a workaround for the time being.
Okay.
I don't know if they're having supply issues with that thing or what, but I know the extractor spring on the S is a stronger spring than the one that's on the original, for whatever reason.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know if you've ever held them side by side, but they seem to be identical except for the lugs on the bottom of the barrel and the locking block that's in the frame. Why they changed that design from a working gun, you know, we may never know.
Right. Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know if they were trying to make it capable of handling 9mm or something, you know, trying to beef stuff up. I don't know. But
that I don't know, but they had a winning design in the Rival. All they needed to do was make it out of steel. And somehow along the way, the reliability went down big time.
Yeah, for sure. The only issue I've ever had with my poly Rival was reloaded ammo being too long. That's the only issue I've ever had.
They do have a little shorter chamber than most guns. I think
they do.
The CZ is similar in that regard.
But I don't have an issue with any type of factory ammo. It's only the powder-coated reloaded that's a little bit longer, changes the dimensions of the bullet, and that's been my only issue. So, but knowing that and seating the bullet properly, I've not had an issue.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm on probably 20,000 rounds on my main gun, and I've not changed a spring in that thing. It's still 100% stock other than the recoil spring, the aftermarket guide rod and recoil spring on it.
There you go. Yeah, I'm with you. I do love Mechanic, so.
Yeah.
So you're primarily shooting carry optics at the moment?
Yep. Yep.
And you've been shooting that since
20, or actually the beginning of 2023, because me and my wife got into this in 2015. We shot all the way through 2017, probably shooting at least once a weekend. There's a match within an hour of here every weekend. And we took a little hiatus. My daughter started to get a little older. She was a baby when we first started shooting. And so we kind of took a little hiatus for a couple years, and I always wanted to get back into it, but we had sold the open guns that we had at the time, and the money to get back into it just wasn't there while we were, you know, life was going on at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up buying a PCC in 2022. I think it was like July or August of 2022. Just a little cheap $700 Brigade PCC. And I was like, you know what? The PCC is a thing now. You know, we can go get our feet wet with some factory ammo and see if we still like this thing. And immediately got rehooked into it. I think within 6 months, I made Grandmaster in PCC. I'd made Master back in the day in open class. I mean, open division. And always wanted the G card, never could get it. And then jumping into PCC, I was like, this is achievable. We can do this. And so pushed until I got my GM card and then switched to carry optics and have been carry optics ever since.
Have you shot carry optics nationals?
No, I haven't. I was actually intending to go this year, but then the whole thing happened around the organization and stuff like that. So being one of the people that was vocal at the time and being in the protest and doing what we can to support Area 3 at the time and stuff like that, I decided not to compete at the Nationals this year. And then also getting the section coordinator position, I didn't want to be the guy that gives himself a slot. I don't even think you can legally per the bylaws, but getting into open registration at Carry Optics Nationals is pretty tough.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I tried last year and it was like right at the exact time that it opened up and everything like crashed. And yeah. When I was finally able to get back in, I was, I don't know how many hundreds of people deep in a waiting list. It was ridiculous.
Yep. So the same was for open PCC Nats last year. I think I was 7 minutes late to registration and I was like 137 on the wait list.
Woo, goodness.
So it goes quick. The handgun nationals doesn't seem to be as popular, but open PCC and carry optics nationals, if you don't get a slot, if you're not on the refresh button when it goes live, you're probably not getting in.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw what I posted recently. I don't know if you're on Instagram, but that's where I post a lot of my stuff. But 85% of all major match competitors have a dot on their gun, so that doesn't leave much space for those iron sight guys.
Yeah, I've been playing with that lately though too. The production moving to 15 rounds has been kind of fun. You don't have to reload every array. I'm still pretty trash with iron sights. I never got any better with that, but it's been fun. It's a new challenge.
So what is this, what is the feel of the section for the production 15 change?
We're loving it. We've got some of the OGs who shot production long ago, back when it was 10 rounds, who've long switched to carry optics, have kind of started coming back. And then I've talked to most of the like top shooters in the area to start shooting with iron sights with me and do like some production battle offs. I genuinely think that it makes you a better shooter if you can shoot iron sights. Your index has to be way better. You don't get that real clear, easy to see dot to know you're on target. You just have to be a better fundamental shooter, I think. And so that's really the main reason I'm going back to it. But yeah, the section overwhelmingly is enjoying it. I know you can't see it on activity because we're not shooting USPSA matches right now, but we've got quite a few people that are shooting production at matches these days at the club level. And that was not okay. The case a month ago or 2 months ago. Nobody was shooting iron sights at all, much less production.
Okay, well, let's take that a step further. What are you getting for feedback with carry optics and limited optics? Because May 1 is a year. At mm-hmm. some point, they're going to have to address that elephant in the room.
Right.
With what are we going to do with carry optics and limited optics? What have you been hearing as to what people want to do with those two divisions?
So some of the like purists, I think, like some of the guys that actually compete in IPSC and stuff, want to see carry optics come back to 15 rounds. And I think that's logical, because I feel like the majority of people use them interchangeably. There's not enough that differentiates the two. I think probably 90% of the people that are shooting limited optics around here are shooting their carry optics gun. They may have stuck a magwell on it or something like that. Or a thumb rest.
Yep.
Yeah. But they're shooting a carry optics gun. So ultimately, the in my opinion, the divisions are too close. Let limited optics be where you can stuff your mag full, you can run 24 rounds, you can compete against the single action guys and stuff like that. And then bring carry optics back in line with the new production. Put it at 15 rounds, make reloading a skill again. And just bring it in line with IPSC. I mean, there's no reason at this point, now that limited optics exists, for us to be different than IPSC with carry optics and production not being aligned like they were at one point.
Yeah, I think one of two things needs to happen. Either you just need to make carry optics single action legal,
right,
or separate them to what you're saying. Make carry optics, production optics 15.
Right.
No thumb rest, period. I don't care if you can replace a pin. Nothing on the outside that could be construed as a thumb rest. No magwell, 15 rounds, slide ride optic. There you go. Make it up. And then, like you said, limited optics would be single action only, or it would allow single action, magwells, thumb rests, all that stuff. And you make it its own division, but I would also get rid of limited 10. I'd keep the same number of divisions, get rid of limited 10, because from January 1 to May 31st of this year, looking at all of the major matches, so far there's been 9 competitors total in limited 10. Do away with it.
Yeah, it is. That's incredible.
It's ridiculous.
I get its purpose at one point in time, but yeah, I'm with you on that. It's pretty much a dead division. There's still, in every state that requires 10 rounds, there's still open 10, there's still limited 10 in that regard and stuff like that. So it really is a useless thing. It's kind of somewhere for somebody to go that I guess doesn't want to compete. I feel like that's sort of what limited optics was when it first came out, was whenever there was a match that had too much heat and carry optics, that was where people ran to be able to compete for plaques and trophies and stuff like that, was limited optics. But now it's catching on too. And there's pretty much, the heat is divided between the two at every match nowadays.
Yeah. Again, I'm going to pull from those statistics that I just did. Carry optics is still, so far, through 5 full months, 35% of all participation at major matches. But limited optics is second at 21. So they are 56% of all competitors.
Yeah, I'd say that tracks from what I've seen at matches that I've been to. I'd say that's probably true. Now, how do you think those numbers would change if carry optics went to 15? You think everybody would jump to limited optics?
I think you'd see a flip. I think you'd see 35% limited optics, 21% carry optics. But right now, I think open is now at 17%. It's less than 20% of all competitors. Limited is less than 10%, or at 10%, 8%, something like that.
Yeah, as soon as they started allowing us to put dots on other guns, I mean, you could see the handwriting on the wall. Open was going to start to suffer.
Yeah. Yeah. So PCC stayed steady right about 12%. So it doesn't really move much. But yeah, I think it's going to be, I think the numbers will reverse, because I think people are going to want to just stuff their mags.
No, I agree. I think the purists for carry optics will stay for the 15 round thing, because I feel like those were the ones that were the squeaky wheels when it comes to the single action thing. So they're, you know, their idea of like you can pay to win, so to speak, by going out there and buying you a $5,000 2-pound trigger 2011. And some of those guys don't want to compete against those guys. But, you know, we have a couple guys around here that are very IPSC based, and they just want to they want to be able to compete on a level playing field with everybody, because like Jim Krantz shoots down here. He shoots 15 rounds year round, whether he's competing with us or not. He's always in IPSC mode. And, you know, I've done it with him a couple of times, but it would be nice to get back to that, to where, you know, we're practicing for what you would do on the world stage, instead of having to be at a detriment and go to some of these matches where you're competing against guys that got 24 rounds in a mag, or 25 nowadays with the new base pads they just came out with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like they're constantly 3D printing new followers and springs and seeing how many rounds you can stuff in these magazines.
It's out of control. It's like,
at some point they're going to start shaving the edges of the brass and the rounds on one side, right? So they can stuff another one in there.
Oh goodness.
Now, since you have a guy who's seems to be all about IPSC. Has he been able to talk anybody into written stage briefs in these non-USPSA matches where you have to stay within the fault lines?
Oh, yeah. So actually, we have a club. It's not actually in my section. It's the neighboring section, but it's like 10 miles across the border. So, and it's actually ran by Louisiana guys. But that one, we kind of flip back and forth. So on a monthly basis, it'll be like a USPSA style courses. And then, and actually the WSBs will reflect this. The next month we'll have like very IPSC based stuff. And sometimes that will be written on there where like, look, we're doing IPSC stuff, you know, no stepping out of the fault lines, you know, all these different things, no sight pictures. You know, we use it as like an IPSC training grounds.
Okay. How are people receiving that?
Not big fans most of the time. They, the stages are awesome. I mean, it's nice to every now and then not have where you go to this side, you shoot four targets, you go over here, you shoot four targets, where you have to actually have to pop in and out and poke and shoot one target here or a piece of steel and a target there. Like, it's a nice switch up, but yeah, I would say the majority prefer their USPSA style to the IPSC style. But the PCSL thing is starting to catch on too, which is cool.
Damn Americans.
Always got to have some kind of special.
Yeah, I don't like that way. We got to do it our way.
No metric system, no IPSC, no, you know.
Well, I'm definitely against the metric system, even though I know it. I'm against it just because it's not American. But I do like some IPSC flavor, you know, if you have a stage set up and if you have to stay within the fault lines, I mean, it really gives you a direct comparison of how people can shoot, how good they are.
Yeah. It's less gameable, you know, and then it is, then you can get creative with the start positions where you start them in the middle, where in a USPSA match, they'd probably run around a wall to shortcut the stage. Where this one, you got to go all the way down, come all the way back, go all the way around. So I feel like it tests different skills. And
probably more along the line of what the designer wanted anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a big thing.
Yep. Yeah, I like that. I would like to see more of that throughout USPSA, but it's not.
Well, so that's the thing, too, with the, you know, shooting hit factor matches here recently is, you know, the rule book and all that stuff is one thing, but the, like, stunting creativity on the stage design side, USPSA has a lot of stage design rules and stuff like that. You can't forbid certain things and stuff like that. The creativity that we've been able to have for the last couple of months has been fun. I think the shooters have been enjoying that side of things. Like minimal target sizes and stuff like that being a thing of the past. It's been fun to play with some new stuff.
And with all the conversations I've had with people, that's the biggest thing that seems to be coming out is all the creativity. And if nothing else, they all hope that maybe this would be the grand experiment. And at the end of all of this, whenever it gets beyond what's happening, is maybe we bring some of those ideas in. Right. And incorporate them into the sport and grow the sport and stop hindering that creativity.
No, and I agree. I think a lot of it is just antiquated because we, for a long time, had to be careful with the production and revolver and limited 10 shooters and not putting too big of an array in one section or putting too difficult of targets to where they end up having to do standing reloads the whole stage. But like you're saying, with the attendance being mostly like, what, 85% red dots and stuff these days, I feel like that we can kind of, even if we have like a USPSA 2.0 in the sense that like this is going to be more of a dot match, to where you don't have to design stages, like maybe there's two different types of USPSA going forward, where you still have the older need to be careful for the revolver and production shooters, like level twos or something like that, but level ones I think should be able to have free reign. And you don't have to worry about people showing up and be like, this is illegal, that's illegal. There's too many targets over here. You know,
I almost feel like a level one should be a free-for-all. It should be up to the match director. Whatever he wants to do, as long as it's safe,
right?
That should be okay.
Yeah, safety paramount. But yeah, I think it could be the testing grounds for, you know, their ideas. I don't think that we should be sticklers for the rules in that regard, like stage design. At level ones, Because that's our place to play around, and our the response we've received so far is that people are enjoying the creativity that we're allowed to do now. Like just recently, we did multiple targets, like multiple different types of targets on the same stage, which I know is illegal, but stuff like that's kind of cool. It simulates real life a little bit more, like with the PCSL targets with the K zone and stuff. I think the PCSL target in particular is just a nifty, like neat deal. The way it changes the dynamic on a stage.
It sure does. I like it too. And I told someone recently, I was like, if there was a 35 yard K target out there, I would actually try to put one round in the K spot and move along.
Yep. I did that just this weekend on one of the PCSL stages. I finished on a K zone. It was one of the ones where I even thought about it during the walkthrough, and I'm like, man, if the sight looks good and I call a K hit, I'm just going to leave it. And sure enough, that's what happens. And it was there. So, but it's cool for, especially for like your production guys and stuff like that. Cause you could shoot a 16 target stage and 16 shots and still get all your alphas if you're a dead shot, but it saves you a reload. You could shoot it all in one mag basically.
You could. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I even think it would be cool to have like those, I think it's I-Core that has the tombstone shaped targets, with a scoring rings. I even think something like that would be pretty cool to just maybe have a stage that, hey, so let's say you have an 8 stage local match. One of them is IPSC where you have to stay within the lines. One of them's your typical USPSA run and gun. You have a classifier, so that has to be within all the rules. But then you have one that has maybe K targets and USPSA style targets. And then you have another one that's maybe IDPA targets. Another one that has like the
I'm with you.
I-Core. Just kind of mix it up. It's fun. It's a local a level one. Yeah.
We've done that in the past. It always had to be the weekend that you'd have an outlaw match. We've done that in the past. They had a local guy that was an MD for a while who was doing multi-discipline matches, he would call them. And it was exactly stuff like that. You'd have a steel challenge stage in the middle of the match. You'd have a bunch of different types of targets like that. Of course, PCSL at the time didn't exist. But, yeah, the multi-discipline thing I think is cool. You could even turn it into a trophy match type of deal and do a little cookout for the shooters. I mean, that's what this guy used to do. And still to this day, it was the thing that I remembered as being like the most fun at locals was actually testing all disciplines all in one match. And you're seeing it all on one score sheet at the end of the day.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be fun.
Yeah, it is fun. The pro-am style stages and stuff like that. Pro-am used to be a thing when we used to shoot back in the day. And now I don't think, unless it's on like a local level, I don't see any pro-ams anymore these days.
No, I want to say there was something similar to one last year, but
they have that falling steel world series. I don't know if you've seen that. Those guys are doing that up north where it's just a bunch of knockdown steel. It's not quite pro-am, but the reactive targets thing, I think is what a lot of these shooting sports are missing as far as making this more spectator friendly. You can't see hits on paper, but everybody can see who knocked down the most pieces of steel.
Right. And that's what, when you had the Prairie Fire rank competition, that's all it was colored steel.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's much more, like you said, spectator friendly. So,
yeah, I think that's the future, honestly.
You might be right. You might be onto something there. Now, you hadn't been back to shooting all that long. And then what made you decide to become the section coordinator or throw your hat in the ring for section coordinator?
That's a good question.
Drugs.
So like I said, when we started shooting in 15 and 16, I feel like that was like the glory days almost of the shooting world. Matches had bigger prize tables. The match fees were cheaper. Components were a whole lot cheaper. I feel like everybody was doing a whole lot more shooting back then. And the shooting sports was more alive. Or USPSA was more alive back then. I know the member count's probably higher now, but our sectional used to fill up within 10 minutes. Like you had the same thing for like Carry Optics Nationals. Our Louisiana Gator Classic back then, if you weren't on the computer refreshing, you didn't get in. And I think the last one was 2022, the Gator. We didn't have one last year, and that's actually what got me to go for section coordinator, was us not having a section championship. But, you know, like the last Gator, I think it was like I signed up like the week before the match. Like it was a week before and the match still hadn't filled. And so that being the case and me remembering what once was, the section coordinator at the time wasn't running for reelection. And I don't think anybody had stepped up yet. So I reached out to him and said, hey, I want to throw my hat in the ring. He's like, oh, well, I've got two other people. I'm like, okay, cool. And a couple months into that, I had talked to the two guys that were running against me, basically. And they were like, look, I didn't know that you were going for it. If you're going for it, I'll drop out. And so I ended up winning by default, basically. I ran unopposed. But I was already helping at every local club. We set up, me and my wife shoot, and we set up every single local that we go to. There's four locals, one for every weekend. And we go out and set them up anyway. So I'm already there. I'm already meeting everybody. I'm already holding matches. I MD'd the Swamp Stomp last year, which is basically our section championship, like replacement unofficially. I've always wanted to put on matches and I've never been in a position to do it. And then when I saw that he wasn't running and that we had missed our section championship last year, I was like, all right, well, I vow not to let that happen anymore. And if nobody else will do it, then I'll do it. And so I just stepped up and here I am. And then come to find out the whole thing happened in December with Scott. And that kind of threw a wrench in the plans. But I had very big intentions when I signed up to do this thing. And, you know, I still do. I'm still planning on the section championship. I still want to do Swamp Stomp as its own thing, its own, like, level two match. You know, I still have big plans. But with Ken in the mix now, I don't know if I'll be here to see those plans through. At least as section coordinator, I can still do it as the match director, of course.
Right. And we'll get there. So what do you think was the main reason that people weren't coming to the Gator match?
I don't know. I wasn't here for the last couple of years. I've heard some stories, some hearsay as to what was happening at the last couple of years. I think people just got burnt out. The match had moved from South Louisiana, where most of the shooters are, up to Princeton, Louisiana, which is like South Arkansas almost.
Oh, wow.
And so it's like a 6-hour drive, 5.5-6-hour drive for most of the shooters in Louisiana. So that makes it a little tougher to like RO, you know, most of the time with it being down here, everybody staying home, you got to get a hotel up there. And so it just became not as economically feasible for most of the Louisiana shooters. And then, I just think it lost some of its shine. You know, it used to be like this big thing. It's kind of like the Mississippi Classic. I don't think they've had a Mississippi Classic in 3 years now. But that used to be like a big crawfish boil and stuff, and that's gone away. They don't have the crawfish boil anymore. So it used to be like a match with an after party, like block party, hang out with all your shooting buddies from the state. And then it just became a match, and then it wasn't as big of a prize table at the last couple. Like most of the level twos I've been to in the past 2 years, I mean, they might have $4,000 on the prize table. They'd have a $4,000 gun on the prize table back in 2015, 2016, when we used to shoot before. So I feel like it's just, it became less about the shooters. It costs so much to have ROs at some of these matches and stuff like that. It isn't the same experience that it once was going to these big matches. It's like a big level two. I mean, a big level one nowadays.
Do you think it's still the COVID hangover? Because prices have not gone back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, that's true, but I feel like most of the regulars that were shooting back then are still shooting now, but they're not going to majors anymore. And that could be part of it, too. I mean, obviously, there's some economic strain going on for all of us.
And that's what I was kind of getting at as well is, you know, we may have come out of COVID, but we're still in that hangover because somebody else is in office where prices of everything are high. Nothing is cheap, so I'm wondering if that plays into it, you know?
That's definitely true, and so I think that's where Swamp Stomp kind of succeeded, where other matches don't. I don't know if you're familiar with that match, but we held a match that was supposed to be in December of last year, so it was going to be like a replacement for the section championship, but it ended up getting postponed because of weather. to January, but we only charged $75 for that match. And I think we ended up having $14,000 on the prize table.
Whoa.
Which based on the number of shooters we had more money on the prize table than we got in fees for the match.
Wow. So,
and that was obviously, we were able to do that because of sponsors and stuff like that. A couple of really good sponsors stepped up and helped us out, but you know, it was a low entry. It was local because it was down here in the south area of Louisiana. And I mean, it filled up, I think it was like 26 hours, 27 hours that match filled.
Wow.
So when you can provide for shooters with not that big of a match fee, and you know, they can spend more of their money on ammo or hotels and stuff like that, I think it gets them back out there. You know, it doesn't have to be all the extra stuff. You don't have to rent a banquet hall for awards and stuff like that. Just give them a really good shooting match, provide them some food, and give them some good prizes, and they'll come.
Now, did you guys have a cookout or anything afterwards there?
Yeah, so we actually got a catering company to bring us a bunch of jambalaya, and they were awesome. They had to postpone, I think, three different times where, you know, with the amount of food we had coming, I'm pretty sure they probably had that stuff already cooked. So they may have ate it. Maybe literally even, but, wow. There was three different times where like the day before I had to cancel the match and postpone it, and they were super cool with it, but the jambalaya was awesome. They brought us a ton of food. We ate at lunch and then went back to shooting and finished the match. It was a 1-day format for everybody.
Okay. And, okay.
It was a solid match. We threw it together in like 2 months cause I found out we weren't having a section. And then I was going to become the section coordinator. And I was like, let's do a big match. And me and a couple of guys that are my core team put it together in like 2 months and got it out there. And if not for the weather, it would have went down. If you end up seeing pictures of that match, that's the one where the range was like 3 feet deep of water.
Oh, it's like the Caribbean Open a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was bad. It was literally 3 feet deep on the range. This range is like the drainage for probably a couple thousand acres. And that's the reason this range exists right here is because it's unfarmable. It's in the middle of a bunch of farmland. It's basically a swamp. And so that's where the name came from, ironically enough. And it turned out to be an actual swamp stomp. I think we had 3.6 inches of rain the night before the match.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.